ear with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin's Republican and Democratic leaders have offered varying proposals to update the state's outdated and overwhelmed unemployment system. But while that's a long-term fix, Bram Sable-Smith reports a series of other steps could more quickly bring relief.
Brandon Kasich filed for unemployment insurance in March after losing his substitute teaching job due to the pandemic. 11 months later, he's still waiting.
You know, the longer this goes on, the less hope that kind of lingers.
Kasich is a Marine Corps veteran who lives with his wife and two children in Marinette. He says nearly every person who's reviewed his case has found no reason to deny compensation, including an administrative law judge who ruled in his favor in December.
The judge went, "Everything's right here. I don't understand this. This is fine. He's approved."
But Kasich has faced many of the hurdles that have prevented the State Department of Workforce Development from getting benefits out quickly to thousands of Wisconsinites during the pandemic. First, he was denied because he gets federal disability help for the seizures that limit his work options. The state initially blocked disability recipients from collecting pandemic unemployment relief before reversing course in June. Then, his claim was denied, likely due to his confusion over one question on the application. He waited 4 more months for his successful appeal hearing, but it could still be weeks before he actually gets paid.
And I'm not in a position financially for any further delays.
The Evers administration largely attributes the department's shortcomings to an antiquated computer system. The department's acting secretary, Amy Pahacik, told WPR's The Morning Show that she was shocked by the state of the technology when she took over in September. New benefit programs can take months to get online. The computers can only do one thing at a time, so call centers need to be shut down before the system can write checks. Plus,
if a claimant needed to get us some type of proof of either wages or identity, they had to either mail or fax documentation into the department. That's how antiquated our systems are.
Governor Tony Evers and the Republican legislature are nearing an agreement on an overhaul. But labor experts say that's a long-term solution. There are changes that could have a more immediate effect. Victor Forberger is a labor and employment attorney in Madison. He represents Brandon Kasich.
I am perplexed continually at the stubbornness here of people to just not understand you need to make the claim filing process easier and remove a bunch of issues.
The pandemic hit about a decade after Republicans under Scott Walker toughened rules for accessing unemployment insurance. Those changes aimed to limit fraud and save money following the Great Recession. But now, during the pandemic, these are issues that a department facing a record number of unemployment claims needs to litigate. Forberger says other states responded by temporarily waiving some restrictions.
What states did is they said, we're facing a cataclysm, we're not going to do these issues.
Wisconsin did waive some restrictions, like a job search requirement, but others are still in place, like the need to investigate job separations that predate the pandemic. Adjudication can take 21 days under the best of circumstances, and these are not the best of circumstances. At a Senate hearing last month, Senator Dan Fine asked Forberger whether the Evers administration or the legislature had the ability to speed up the process. Forberger said both.
It would be nice if you guys competed who could do it first.
Look, that's probably what we'll end up doing.
Indeed, Evers and the legislature have each proposed changes to a few requirements, though far from all that Forberger would like. Meanwhile, Brandon Kasich is approaching a year waiting for help. He's received some assistance to pay his utilities and stay in his home. His wife took on work helping neighbors with childcare for some extra cash.
I'm hoping that something with unemployment comes through in the next few months that allows me to kind of recover.
In the meantime, Kasich stays busy volunteering at a food pantry and helping his two children with online class. One of them even made the honor roll. Bram Sable-Smith, Wisconsin Public Radio.
That story comes from a reporting partnership between WPR and Wisconsin Watch. Now we head across the border to Illinois to take stock of the cannabis industry. Marijuana was fully legalized in Illinois last year. The state set another sales record for January, nearly $89 million in adult-use cannabis purchases. Have you gone to Illinois to buy marijuana? How much should this industry be taxed, and where should cannabis tax revenue be spent? What do you think of Governor Evers' proposal to legalize recreational marijuana in our state? Join in 800-642-1234. Pamela Althoff is Executive Director of the Cannabis Business Association of Illinois. Pam, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thank you very much.
Well, give us the lay of the land. January marked a year since Illinois legalized recreational marijuana. How has business been?
Extraordinarily profitable for the state of Illinois. Give you just a hint.
Yeah, give us some figures, some metrics.
Sure. The Illinois Department of Revenue had estimated that the revenues for the state of Illinois in 2020 would be $57 million. In actuality, it was $175 million. They projected $140 million for 2021, and we basically exceeded that in 2020. So again, I think the revenues anticipated for the industry were extraordinarily conservative, and we have blown those figures out of the water.
When you look at the volume data for 2020 and just how much it exceeded expectation, did dispensaries in Illinois and what they sold last year, was that across the board for all dispensaries, or did you see pockets where there was much more growth?
That's an excellent question. What we really saw was that the suburban areas outside of Cook County, which is the largest county that incorporates the city of Chicago, we saw the sales in those surrounding suburban areas double than what was basically achieved by all the other state counties.
What do you think is going on there?
In all honesty, I think what happened is the proximity to, again, Wisconsin and other states that don't sell marijuana was extraordinarily convenient for out-of-state visits. And then in addition to that, I think that the city of Chicago, as they grappled with how they were going to regulate cannabis, pushed a lot of cannabis companies into the suburban areas where those suburban communities truly were welcoming to the cannabis industry. And so there were a lot of opportunities in those welcoming communities.
Pam, what does this mean for tax revenue for Illinois?
The cannabis industry is actually competing with those revenues from the alcohol industry. So obviously the state of Illinois is really doing well when it comes to a new revenue stream.
We heard from Chad in Minocqua, called in, couldn't stay with us. And Chad says, of course, marijuana should be legalized, and says Wisconsin promotes alcohol so heavily and it causes worse damage than marijuana. When you look at comments like that, how do you compare cannabis industry to other industries like alcohol?
Well, you know, I think the largest challenge cannabis has is the normalization. If you'll recall, for many, many years, marijuana was taught in schools and perceived by the greater communities as a gateway drug to harder substance abuse. That has slowly changed over the years, is still slowly changing, whereas alcohol and, you know, even cigarettes yet are still considered normal behaviors. And so we do a lot of work with the Department of Public Health, as well as several of our other partners, in trying to teach responsible use, but really trying to normalize the use of cannabis.
When you look at the revenues and how they are being spent, break that down for us. You know, how much is the commercially sold marijuana taxed in Illinois, and what determines that?
Excellent question again. Thanks, Kate. In Illinois, and there's still a debate going on about the level of taxation, but the state tax for any cannabis product that is less than 35% THC content is 10%. Anything above that 35% content is taxed at 25%. And all infused products are taxed at 20% of the product. There are several different expenditures on how we distribute those tax dollars. The first, obviously, is to defray all of the administration costs, and that's to the Department of Revenue, to the Department of Agriculture, to the Department of Finance and Professional Regulations, to DCEO, to public health, to state police. And then we have a large portion that we also provide to the Criminal Justice Authority, and that is for all of expungement efforts. So all of those expenditures are done first. Then 8% of the tax revenue is given to our local government distributive fund with the requirement that it needs to be spent on law enforcement and police training. Then we have 25% goes to the Restore, Reinvest, and Renew program, which is basically a grant program for those communities that were disproportionately impacted by the war on drugs. Those are grants and loans. 20% goes to human services, and that is for mental health and substance abuse expenditures. 10% goes to budget stabilization, and that's basically all of the unpaid backlog of bills that Illinois is still addressing. And then the remaining 35% goes to the general revenue fund.
So permeating a lot of different areas with this tax revenue. Critics have said these tax rates are too high and it will drive people to a black market to buy cannabis. What are dispensary owners thinking and saying about the tax rate?
That is the conversation. The conversation is the dispensary owners will obviously charge what the state requires. The conversation really needs to be elevated to our state elected officials in that determination on whether they see the sale of cannabis meeting their expectations, which is, again, to have a quality product and that gets the inappropriate and laced product off the street, decreasing the sale of a black market. Are those taxes inhibiting those goals, or are they helping? And I think that that's, again, that conversation is at a higher level than the dispensary owners.
Pam Althoff heads up the Cannabis Business Association of Illinois. It represents the state's marijuana companies. Recreational marijuana is legal in more than a dozen states. What direction should Wisconsin head? What questions do you have about how Illinois licenses and regulates this industry? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Pam Althoff here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation about Illinois' cannabis industry. Marijuana has been fully legal for our neighbors to the south for more than a year now. According to figures published this month by Illinois' Department of Financial and Professional Regulation, of the nearly $89 million spent on adult-use marijuana products last month, more than a quarter of those sales came from out-of-state visitors. Pam Althoff is Executive Director of the Cannabis Business Association of Illinois. She's with us for about 10 more minutes. Let's bring in Chris now in Racine. Chris, hi, go ahead.
Hi. I work in mental health and addiction. I'm actually not against legalization of marijuana. However, frankly, it could probably have less to do with some of the problems we've seen with lacing it with horrible substances that create permanent damage. But I am concerned about the kids. Are you seeing an increase in usage among teenagers? Substance abuse is not good for developing brains.
Chris, thank you. Pam Althoff, what have you seen with marijuana with minors in Illinois?
Well, let's, you know, again, go back to the actual statute and the law. Part of the development of that law required that 2% of the tax revenues be administrated by the Department of Public Health to educate the communities and our general public about the use of cannabis and how it can affect individuals. So there's a huge amount of education opportunities here where we're telling children specifically about responsible use and not use until they're 21. Gaining access to a dispensary is a very regulated process. We have not only security cameras, but we have security on site, and you have to show some type of identification, state ID, driver's license, passport, indicating that you are 21. It's scanned into a system. So you can't even gain access to a legal dispensary unless you are 21 years of age and have the appropriate identification. And then we are doing, I would say, a bigger, broader effort and just, again, educating the populace about responsible use.
Chris, thank you for the call. Matt now in Milwaukee. Hi, Matt. What would you like to add?
Good morning. I'd like to mention that it not only is a tax revenue very important to the state, but I think the laws on a state-by-state basis need to be designed to help the create jobs and businesses for state residents. And Illinois' law encouraged a lot of outside investment from large corporations. There's very few licenses available, and the prices of them are exorbitant. And in comparison to a state like Michigan, where there's probably 10,000 permits issued, small farmers, small retail owners, just lots and lots of jobs. My son has a biology degree from the University of Wisconsin in Milwaukee. He was employed in Michigan. The jobs are good paying jobs, and the companies are many of them are Michigan-based companies, as opposed to the way it's going in Illinois with a very limited number of permitted companies.
Matt, thank you for sharing. Pam, what are the equity issues in licensing?
I would somewhat disagree with Matt. We have four major corporations located in the city of Chicago. All of those corporations are license holders, and they not only employ people at their dispensaries and cultivation sites, but at their corporate headquarters. So we provide a great deal of opportunity to residents in Illinois in finding job opportunities. In addition, the state rolled out and controlled the industry on purpose. We looked at other states. When I say we, the state of Illinois regulators and elected officials looked at other states and recognized some of the challenges that they experienced with just a complete free market approach and opening the doors to everyone. And there was an overproduction of product. There were businesses that actually literally went out of business in 6 to 8 months. We did not want to repeat those somewhat failures. And so we did a very slow, methodical rollout on purpose to ensure the success of the industry and to ensure those people who did not have the large investment from outside entities could in fact succeed in the state of Illinois. And that was done purposefully.
But there has been frustration and a light shone on that the initial round of licenses were not spread out equitably to people of color and people who have been wanting to, get a license for a marijuana dispensary. What is the issue there?
Well, what happened there is that, if you'll recall, the state of Illinois began with a medical program. It was a redacted application. So those people that were scoring those applications had no idea the makeup of the organization or the ownership makeup. And out of a possible 60 applicants or 60 licenses, 55 were awarded, and again, redacted applications, and the majority of those were men, white men. What occurred then is when the recreational legislation was put into place, in order to ensure that people had access to the product, these companies had been vetted and had been up and operating for over 5 years. So the state determined that it would be appropriate to allow those individual companies to have an additional adult use location. So again, we passed a bill. We said, we were recreationalizing cannabis. We needed to have locations for people to purchase the product. The next round of licenses was specifically created for social equity applicants. people who were disproportionately impacted by the war on drugs. Unfortunately, COVID occurred. The licenses were supposed to be awarded May 1st. They were delayed because of the COVID issue. And then there were several other legal challenges. And then there were also the issue of we did not have in place rules on how a lottery, in the event that there were several tied applicants in that next round. We're dealing with it. I'm hopeful that those licenses will be awarded sometime within the next 2 months and get them up and operated. There's also an opportunity of a second lottery. So rather than the initial 75 dispensary licenses, there will, in fact, most likely be 150 dispensary licenses because of that delay.
Let's bring in Tony in Egg Harbor with a question. Hi, Tony. Go ahead.
Good morning. Good morning, Pam. Being a former McHenry County resident, I followed Pam's career from school teacher to state senator, so I think it's a perfect segue that she's educating the public and the ins and outs of the cannabis industry. That being said, the Wisconsin Tavern League seems to be a big roadblock into the legalization in Wisconsin. Did you run into those experiences in Illinois, and do you have any suggestions for Wisconsin how to deal with that?
I'm sorry, Tony, I didn't hear what the challenge was.
Do you have any suggestions for Wisconsin to deal with, like the Wisconsin Tavern League, in trying to assuage them into reamending their position?
I understand. I didn't hear the Tavern League part. You know, Illinois worked on their cannabis, the legalization cannabis bill, for 3 years. And over the 3 years, we received a great deal of support just by educating individuals. So we really didn't run into a lot of opposition from what I would say, you know, our competitive sin businesses, you know, tobacco and alcohol. Our biggest challenge at the time was more of a perception by the general population that legalizing cannabis would be relatively immoral and an issue with access for children.
Pam,
so that was our
Pam, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Pam Althoff is Executive Director of the Cannabis Business Association of Illinois. Stay with us. We talk with the author of a book about the relationships people of color have with the great outdoors, and we check in with a woman from Duluth who's hiking the entire Ice Age Trail. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.